You are listening to the Magnetic Marketing Marketing Secret Gold Members Only Podcast.
I want to talk about mindset for our session. And one of the things, you know, like Earl Nightingale's Acres of Diamonds versus Chasing Greener Pastures. And what are your thoughts just on that right there? Just what immediately comes to mind? Acres of Diamonds versus trying to find greener pastures.
Acres of Diamonds, of course, is the Russell Conwell
speech.
Talk. Yeah. So Earl's point about greener pastures and the greener pastures story is a point about human nature and that successful people force themselves to rise above human nature and unsuccessful people don't. It really, and Earl quoted William James, you know, the only difference between man and pig both have nature. They both have instinct. They both have impulses. The pig does not have a mind. So the pig exercises almost no control whatsoever over his instinctive impulse. If you take horses, here's how pea-brained horses are, is almost every horse, if you rescue it from a burning barn and let go of it, it runs back into the fire because its ingrained instinct is to get to its home. So successful humans are constantly challenged to rise above basic human nature, their instincts, and their impulses. So, seeing greener pastures in the distance is a part of basic human nature. And the longer you're in your pasture and are working your pasture, the more likely you are to see other pastures as greener. This causes adultery, extramarital affairs, divorce, threat over divorce. So often, that is about greener pastures. And the business causes everything from departure from a market, a physical place, system, media, a way of doing things. And often it causes, you know, the chasing of the new shiny object. As the person's nature is to believe that there has to be an easier, simpler way of getting from A to B than the one I'm using. When they look at the other one from a distance, they see that. One of the things that always occurs in a mixed breed of dog mastermind group where everybody's in different businesses is everybody's excited about being in the other guy's business because everybody's business sounds better to them than the one they're in.
Right. But in order to get a different result, you got to do something different, which means looking at different stuff. So how can you manage the need to try different stuff without falling prey to the greener pastures or the bright, shiny object syndrome? How do you kind of manage that risk?
Well, first of all, there are a lot of opportunities to test things in small ways to try and validate them or not validate them against what in direct response we call controls. So if you've always been running TV ads that have a sexy girl in them and are price driven, come in this weekend and buy a car, and you're spending $50,000 a week on that advertising, and you go to a mastermind meeting and there's a car dealer from Alabama who's running an entirely different kind of commercial and bragging about the results, you don't need to come home, scrap what you're doing, spend $50,000 on his kind of commercial in order to validate or invalidate that concept for you and your market. You could run that kind of an ad on the internet and drive traffic to it. The other thing is that peril is that people disrupt one part of a system without thinking about how the other parts might be different. So I'll stick with that example. The one set of commercials may be bringing in a type of customer. And now the entire selling system has evolved, probably more than been designed, but has evolved into a system that works with that type of customer.
Gotcha.
Right? If the, oh boy, look at that, different kind of commercials, I'm going to go run those. If they bring in a different kind of customer, and the guy in Alabama has either designed or evolved an entire selling system for that kind of customer, and now you're bringing one in that doesn't fit the rest of your selling system, your front-end result is going to turn into a crappy back-end result, right?
Exactly.
So you're absolutely right that, like in the Seven Figures Academy, or I've said it, that like you don't go from six figures to seven figures income, with rare exceptions, by simply doing more of what you're already doing and doing it faster and working harder at it. You do different things and you do them differently. But that should be done as a methodical process of change, not an abrupt and irrationally exuberant leaping from one entirely different thing to another, to another, to another.
So evolution rather than revolution.
Yeah, and managed change, not emotionally driven change.
Okay. What are your thoughts, Dan? And I mean, I don't take this the wrong way, but I've never thought of you as warm and cuddly, like a big teddy bear. But well, what would you say to...
That's because I don't want to be thought of.
Well, then you've done a great job with your persona, and you don't need me to tell you that. But what would you say to somebody? What advice would you give somebody who's on that road and... How do you stay motivated? How do you stay on track? How do you outlast the competitors? What are your thoughts on that?
So first of all, most success is not sustained. Most success tends to have pretty short lives in the grand scheme of things. So there are tons of actors, scriptwriters, directors, musicians, music groups, etc., who are like one-hit wonders. And they're a big friggin' deal for a short, very short period of time, and then they're never seen or heard from again. Right? The Kevin Costner of the world, who now everybody's watching in Yellowstone, they're very rare in Hollywood. They're very rare. The sustained career over decades and decades and never not working. Very rare. We used to have multi-year dynasties in the NFL. You know, you'd have 3 or 4 years of nobody being able to beat the Cowboys.
Right.
You'd have 3 or 4 years of nobody being able to beat the Patriots. Game has changed. The people playing it have changed. The people coaching it have changed. And we haven't seen that in a while. You know, last year's Super Bowl teams are in the fucking dumpster. They're not just a little troubled. They're like a horror show.
Right? They suck. It's bad.
You can list on one side of the chalkboard guys like Brady, who've had sustained careers. And you can list on the other side of the chalkboard the number of quarterbacks, including Heisman Trophy winners, who have played for 3 years or less, never to be seen again.
Yeah.
And the second list is a lot longer than the first. Well, same thing is true of business. The number of startups that, in some cases, attract a huge amount of attention, in some cases, a huge amount of money, who, like, live for 36 months and are never seen from again, is very long. The failure rate is very high. And with individuals, in my world, our world, again, the same thing is true. You took all the people who became motivational speakers in the 1960s, they had at least one best-selling book, a real best-selling book, not a jerry-rigged on the Amazon bestseller list that pretty much anybody can do now, but a real bestseller, and was somewhat of a quote-unquote household name in the sales or the business world. And you now looked at that list in the 80s, you would find the overwhelming majority of them gone.
Yeah.
I mean, gone. A Zig was very rare and is even rarer now. Now, what I believe about all of them, and it's why I'm so saddened by what's going on at Disney, because they are getting themselves into a really deep hole by stopping this. I believe that it loops around to even to your sub question about choice of persona. I believe that the most important thing for sustained success is consistency. People don't see you hopping around. That they know you are very clear in your market. Very clear on the fundamentals, who you are, and what you stand for, and what you do. And I think that, firstly, inconsistency almost guarantees short-lived success.
No, that's great. Sorry, I was hanging on every word there for a second, so I didn't realize there was a period there. What would be your advice to someone who is on that journey, is staying consistent, is very clear about who they are, what they stand for, what they do, and they're working their way towards success? Any thoughts on staying motivated?
Well, if you aren't and can't get any traction, you know, you have to be cognizant of the dog just doesn't want the dog food you're making problem.
Okay.
So you don't get to pick this just because of what you want. An early mentor of mine, which is sort of the same way of saying what I said about impulse control and human nature control, his saying was, the mark of a real adult is that they don't let their wants hurt them anymore. So you have to be careful. So like I started in speaking, doing personal growth, motivation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that discussion with people about success, mindset, habits, behavioral control, access of intuition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the preferred thing I would have wanted to talk about. And it's still a preferred thing I'd rather talk about than advertising and marketing and selling. But I fairly quickly determined that A was a pretty crowded and cluttered category.
Mm-hmm.
E, there was a success pattern to it that I didn't like, meaning that you were, really had to be a quote unquote guru. So you had to like live it without a sliver of error in front of everybody. You could never not be motivated. You could never be grumpy, et cetera. And he seemed to me that it was a price commoditized category because it was ethereal. It's hard to objectively measure results, especially in a short period of time. That suppresses price. So I made these calculations about what I would do as a speaker, trainer, coach, consultant. And I still picked something that I had background in and that interested me. And I can sit and happily have a conversation with you for hours going deep, 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 deep. Advertising or marketing. So it's not like I moved to something that was a square peg in round hole for me. But I did make market and business-like calculations about the choice. I literally dropped the best talk stuff ultimately it all moved to the back end of moving the front end. And I switched to, in many cases, being the only one doing the marketing talk. And I had a story about that. And I had a story about it that was also true. I spent some time, a $25 automobile, passenger seat covered with motivational cassettes, Kmart cassette player jacked into your cigarette lighter hole in the car, unimaginable to many. And, you know, working on my attitude and came to the conclusion painfully that having the greatest attitude in the world was no better than having the worst one. If I couldn't get in front of people with money who would exchange it for something you did or had, use that attitude on. Therefore, the advertising marketing fraction part of the equation, at least as important as the attitude part of the equation. Actually, the truth is that if you've got the advertising marketing attraction part of the equation really clicking, you can get by with a mediocre attitude and still get great results, but vice versa, no, you can't. So I switched my focus both for my personal benefit as well as for what I would present to the marketplace. So I think those considerations are important.
Well, one thing also, I've heard you say several times, in one way or another, is that you made a conscious choice to do something for a specific reason in order to get your goals, to reach your goals, to get closer to what you wanted as the end result. How important is it? You know, I think in Napoleon Hill said that in Think and Grow Rich, that successful people make decisions quickly and change them slowly, and unsuccessful people take forever to make a decision and they change on a dime. Talk about that.
Yeah. Well, he's correct. Life is long, right? And business life is hopefully long. So the leaping or hopping or easily excitedly embracing what's new is not necessary for success. You don't have to be first. And, you know, I've said for many years that pioneers come home full of arrows. And so that's not necessary. You can be slow about being willing. There's this old, I think I'd clean it up. There's the old bit about the really old bull and the really young bull standing together at the top of a hill and looking down on a herd of cows. And the young bull says, you know, let's run down there and they'll each pick one and make mad, crazy bull love with him. The old bull says, how about if we walk down there slowly and we make mad, crazy bull love to all of them?
See, you should be proud of me, Dan. I didn't interrupt that joke, even though I knew, and I didn't blow it this time. So thanks for the training.
Good. And so if you look at guys like Buffett and Carl Icahn and Jim Rogers, the really great super investors of our era, Buffett was very slow to invest in any tech. He was very slow to invest in anything foreign. He's now a pretty big player in businesses that are based in Israel and even some things related to China. He's really been very slow pretty much about every expansion of the range of things that he's been willing to invest in. And of course, he is famously unwilling to touch crypto. Carl Icahn, very much the same. Just saw Carl interviewed on CNBC last week, and he was great. These guys get to a lot of parties late. However, if you look at their overall track record against hundreds, if not thousands, of fund managers and investors, certainly individual retail investors, not only do they beat it in whatever terms you want to use, but even more importantly, they rarely rack up losses, and if you look at longevity, you have guys who have been doing this uninterrupted for 50 years. So, looking at their modus operandi is at least worthwhile, right? And their modus operandi is exactly what you described from Hill. Their modus operandi is slow to change, slow to make an important decision, and very reluctant to be stampeded by popular idea, right? And so, you know, crypto at this point is a good example. Are there people who have made a lot of money? Yes. Are there people who have lost a lot of money? Absolutely. Are the people who have made a lot of money, are they going to be in crypto 10 years from now?
No, they're already out.
They're already out, right? Yeah. I mean, now, will there be some surviving version of this 10 years from now? Probably. Sure. Probably, yeah. Right? But if you want sustained success as an investor, you look at that pretty slow. And gee, how much of the money that I have that I invest in the energy industry do I want to move over here to this early? So I think not only do you need to be internally consistent, meaning you have litmus tests and you have short lists of here's how I do things and here's how I don't do things, right? And here's what I place importance on and here's what I don't place importance on, because you want to reduce the amount of flexibility in your own decision making so that you aren't random, you aren't irrationally exuberant.
Let me ask you this. I mean, the stuff, you know, who you are, what you stand for, what you do, what you don't do, what is and isn't important to you. How important is that? I know it's important internally, but are there advantages to making external declarations? I mean, this sounds like it's tying back into your persona and stuff.
Yeah, sure. So it's important to be consistent internally, and then it's important to be consistent in your presentation to your relationship with but now you're a market.
You come out and say what you are for, what you're not for. I mean, that's part of your whole marketing. And I mean, that's like a public declaration, almost a condition of doing business with you.
Certainly to a great extent, you do it.
Okay.
There's a pretty good book about the creation of the Lutheran religion, which, of course, was spinoff from Catholicism. Unhappy spinoff. Book is Brand Luther. Subtitle is How an Unheralded Monk Turned His Small Town into a Center of Publishing, Made Himself the Most Famous Man in Europe, and Started the Protestant Reformation. The last name of the author is Pettigree, Pettigree. And the book is, in some respects, a marketing book. It wasn't written for that reason. History book, so you have to wade through, you have to be willing to wade through the history. But it's actually a marketing book. And one of the first things that Luther, of course, did is he wrote his manifesto and went over and nailed it to the Catholic Church door for the town to see. If you recall, Rich Dufferin sort of relaunched himself at a certain point by creating his internet manifesto.
Yeah, I think he did that in 2007.
There you go, and nailing it, you know, to the web for all the townspeople to see. So, like Disney for, by the way, rebrand Luther. Then you go read a good biography or two about Hefner and how he used the quote-unquote Playboy philosophy to build that business, not just it's an ass. The parallels are profound. And GM Playboy in the 60s and 70s into the 80s were very political. They were very driven by a particular philosophy. And the original Playboy philosophy, published in 4 installments, I think, was the manifesto nailed to the door. Now, I'm not necessarily saying you have to be controversial, but more often than not, some level of the heretic challenging the established orthodoxy is not only a way of getting attention, but it is part of a persona and a business that done and done again and done again and done again.
But so, that again can carry risk and cause you to feel less than confident and comfortable. What advice would you give somebody who's feeling some self-doubt or maybe experiences initial failures, but they know they're going in the right direction, but they're experiencing headwind?
So these days, more than ever, is important to find ways to be speaking to a receptive audience.
Okay.
And avoiding an unreceptive audience. They don't just walk out on you anymore. They set fire to you on social media. They come and camp out in your front yard.
Yeah.
They organize boycotts.
It's
important. Find your place and your people. for yourself and your business. And try and avoid exposure in the wrong places to the wrong people. Because you get mentally and emotionally beat up the more of that you do. Not only do you need a thick skin, but you really need strategy to market yourself selectively. You are looking for message to market match and messenger to market match. And really don't want to hang around too long. I believe the advice of Jesus to his disciples was find an unreceptive town, brush the dust from your feet, move on. That's not a verbatim quote, but that was his point.
Yeah.
And so a big mistake people make that then affects their confidence and their mindset, you know, and all of that, is that they put themselves in the wrong place or in front of the wrong people. They are then understandably affected by the disapproval or the rejection or the resistance of those people. Feels to them like a mandate, stop doing X, or to change and do Y. And a small amount of it can seem like the majority. I had early in speaking, I got a gig, speak to monthly dinner meeting of the Administrative Management Society in Wichita, Kansas. Winter. Which Wichita's a lovely little place, but not in winter.
Okay.
But anyway, so the Administrative Management Society, and this is when I was, this is very early, so I'm doing success stuff. I'm still talking personal development. Administrative Management Society is made up of 50-year-old middle management executives in dull companies, and they all have, they all wear button-down shirts. They all have the shoes on with the laces and the little pinholes in them. They all, a bunch of them had pocket protectors with lead pencils and pens in them. And they are one step away from being the walking dead. And it was a long 75 minutes. And Tyler, the head of the group, loved me and said to me, "You got the best reaction of any speaker we've had in a year." And I'm thinking,
whoa.
You know, sympathies to everybody else. So two things were abundantly clear. One, these were not future customers. And my purpose, gather customers. So I'm in the wrong place for my purpose. Beyond that, in today's world, to your point, I would be at unproductive risk because I'm in front of the wrong people for me. I don't care if you run a restaurant or you're in the carpet cleaning business, whatever. These points apply. There are people who will resonate your message, your style of being a messenger will resonate with them. And there are other people that you will fall on deaf ears.
Right.
And there are other people who will hate your message or your style of messenger. You want to figure out how to be in the right place to find the right people for who you are. We have this right now with High Point University. People would do well to follow what Nito's doing at High Point. The new edition of their magazine came out. And a two-page message from President, from Nito, in it. One of the all-time best positioning pieces I've ever seen. And it very elegantly, but forcefully, says who we're for and who we're not for. And they're advertising on television, NBC and Fox Business, because parent they want, an ideal parent for them, is a entrepreneur or small to mid-sized company CEO. His values or her values are much more likely to match up with HPU. And they advertised on ABC during The View. That might be a great place for Berkeley or Stanford. Well, I'm serious.
No, I agree. I'm just laughing.
Or Oberlin, but it'd be a disaster for them. Commercial they're running right now, if they ran it on ABC during The View, first of all, ABC would probably refuse to run it. If they did run it, there'd actually be a risk of the women on The View attacking it.
Yeah.
And there'd be no prayer of attracting a parent who would want to send their kid to High Point. So it would be pointless. If for some reason they got the space for free, my advice to them would be, don't run a commercial there. And that's what I decided at the end of my speech, because the lovely woman who ran the chapter said, you know, told me how great I was and how everybody loved me. And, you know, I'm like wanting to run around and check pulses. And she then says that she is very enthusiastically, you know, going to contact all the other chapter presidents of the Administrative Management Society chapters all across the country. And, you know, I could do 50 of these. And having to hug her and say, darling, let's not do that.
Right.
Dolly Parton just got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where she is in the next class being inducted. Now, Dolly Parton is somebody who has had a sustained, successful career over many, 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 many. And she's in the Country Music Hall, arguably, is where she belongs. So she said the other day that she is now old enough and to the point that it doesn't matter to her, that she is going to do a rock music album. She's always wanted to do a rock music album. And she has been invited to do rock music albums many times. And she has always resisted the urge because it is so inconsistent with who she is to her audience, to her market, to the world. So she has had the discipline to be consistent against one of her wants, one of her urges, for a long time because of the value of consistency.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I want to sum up all the stuff you said, because it's funny how this, everything that we've done over the last year, it's funny how nothing operates independently. So if you want to be successful, first step is to find a market you resonate with, which means the right place, the right people, the right message, and the right style. Once you've got that, consistent service, grow relationships with buyers first, and remember that you're in the customer acquisition business. And if you do that, you're going to find success.
You know, it's so common and so understandable for business owner, the entrepreneur, to be product obsessed and focused.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To be pushing product out there. And probably 90% of all advertising, marketing, and in selling, prospecting, push, not pull. And so it's from the standpoint of, essentially, what do we got on the shelf? What do we got on the cart? What do we want to do? And then how can we push it out the door? And so very little thought given by most to attraction instead of pursuit, to pull instead of push. But the thing that most entrepreneurs then don't understand is that the only real equity they have in a business that is sustainable, that cannot be disrupted, commoditized, competitively destroyed, made technologically obsolete, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is their customers and the relationship they have with them. That is all about the match. So attraction is so much more important from a sustainable success standpoint. From a very short view, how can we sell some stuff this weekend? And we don't really care who we sell it to. Everybody's money's the same. From a very short view, that's right. And how can you argue with that? We got stuff. We want to exchange it for money. We don't care who gives us the money. So how can we push all the stuff out there? And from a short view position, it makes all the sense in the world. From a long view position, a sustainability position, an equity position, it makes no sense whatsoever. So here's why. So it's said in the Renegade Millionaire is that most business owners get customers to make sales. We make sales to get customers. Our purpose is ranching, not hunting. Our purpose is the corralling of really good customers and keeping them, being of consistent, repetitive, or recurring use and value to them. And you literally measure your success by your number of lifers, your number of, if you're somewhat transactional, your number of frequent buyers. So you run a store, you measure your success. If you run a Hallmark store, measure your success by how many customers you have who come in every month versus how many customers you have who only come in at Christmas. That's a more frequent buyer. You measure your success by how many customers are coming in every month, their third year, their fourth year, or their fifth year, that they have a relationship with you. So that's about the customer. Now, there's a certain type of customer who's going to do that and a certain type of customer who isn't. And from the very beginning, we want to try and attract the customers who will do that.
Right.
I just got a report from a private client, all their marketing statistics, because I talk to them tomorrow. And they have a number of lead sources. This is a complex and expensive sale. They have a number of lead sources from whom come customers that require a 19-month sales cycle. They have a number of lead sources that produce leads that require a 28-month sales cycle. It appears that the behavior after the sale, the value after the first sale, is the same. So what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about how do we get more who buy in 19 months rather than requiring 29 months before they buy. Then we'll also talk about how can we get the 19 months down to 16 months? And it is undoubtedly about message and messenger to eligible buyer match. The reason it's taking longer has to do with the magnetism of the message and the messenger. So to some, we get to trust and enthusiasm and excitement in not quite half the time, but in a lot less time than with others. But we're right. doing the same thing to all of them.
Right.
So that says something about them, because the process works. So it says something about them, not about the process or the message or the messenger.
you've been listening to one of our Gold Members Only podcasts, make sure you upgrade and become a Diamond member and get access to the Diamond Members Only podcast as well. On top of that, you'll also get access to the whole enchilada with all Dan's courses and so much more. So make sure you upgrade to Diamond now by going to diamondupgrade.com.